From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 14th day of February. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson at TGM. We'll get an early look at the crop insurance decisions that the Farm Doc team has been thinking about. And we'll hear from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.24 1/4, down 6.5 cents. The May at $4.37 1/4, 6 lower. And December new crop down 5.5 at $4.64 1/4. March soybeans $11.70 1/2, 15 3/4 lower. May at $11.76 1/4, down 15.5. And new crop November at $11.55, down 2 1/4 cents, rather 10 1/4 cents. Bean meal futures at $3.43.30, $1.50 lower. The bean oil down 95 cents at $46.35. Soft red winter wheat 12 cents lower, $5.85 1/2. The settlement price for the March, the hard red March at $5.87 3/4, down 6 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures at $184, down $1.10. Feeders at $246.22 1/2, $1.77 1/2 lower. And lean hogs, $84.52 1/2, up $3.45. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing, part of the Elevator System across the southern half of the state of Illinois, a little bit of Indiana as well. Of course, he's at the Elevator here in Champaign County. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're very welcome, Todd. Good to be here.
It sounds like everybody but you and I are on break this week, I guess.
That's right. The Chinese are taking the week off. It's the Chinese New Year, and the Brazilians are taking the week off. It's carnival down there. And so, yeah, we should probably take this week off as well, especially looking at the markets today. I wish we could take today off.
Yeah, it would be very nice to take today off because of that. We are not, so we probably need to talk about it. What happened with corn?
There's really not a lot of news. The one thing is the economy is rolling along hotter than what traders were expecting. So as a result, the U.S. dollar is much stronger. The expectation is now that the Fed will not need to lower interest rates anytime soon. So we're going to maintain the higher dollar, higher interest rate scenario for a little bit longer. And that's obviously not good for commodities. And so you've got traders that have already been short, adding to those short positions, staying short commodities and trying to, play the market that way. So the macro economy is probably the big news yesterday and today.
Well, I was thinking about this when we were discussing it yesterday, though I didn't really get a chance to take a look at it after yesterday's sharp drop in the Dow. Now down just some today, but it's still lower. Usually it's a risk off in one side or the outside markets, for instance, the Dow, the S&P, those kinds of things. But they will buy into safer havens like grains and oil seeds. Why do you suppose that did not happen?
Well, the new theory is that in that works in inflationary scenarios, but when we're talking about moderate inflation but higher interest rates, even though you would think interest rates and inflation go hand in hand, the theory is that these higher interest rates take more of an impact than the inflation psychology. So higher interest rates are still negative for commodities. It just makes the dollar stronger, which makes our exports less competitive in the world markets, and it also makes it more expensive for elevators and farmers to hold on to grain for any length of time. So that might encourage a little bit more movement with the higher interest rates.
Has there been movement? Have been trucks been coming in, and is that sales already made for corn and or beans, or is it new sales that producers are putting on?
Yes, the corn is moving. The weather has been ideal last week and this week for the most part. It's not too cold and it's not too soggy. So we've definitely seen movement. The problem is the movement has not really translated into selling. A lot of the farmers are hauling in to fill contracts that they had previously sold earlier, or that they're hauling in on the free storage, free DP, and so they haven't sold that grain yet. So farmer movement, yes. Farmer selling, not so much.
Will there need to be a moment in the next 2.5 weeks before we get to the end of the month that producers need to make a decision about a sale?
It feels like it, yes. I think there's some bills that come due March 1. payment, land payments, that type of thing, cash rent payments. So yes, for whatever reason, I think we will see some farmer movement between now and the 1st of March. And it's just a question of whether we can get a little bit of a bounce to make us feel better about those sales, or if we just have to make them out of necessity.
So either way, there will be corn coming into the market. How much pressure do you suppose those sales will put on the marketplace?
Well, we've seen basis levels weaken this week. We've obviously seen the futures prices weaken for ever since the first of the year. So some of this may already be in place, but until something changes, it's hard to expect a bounce. I think at this point, maybe the best we can hope for is just sideways until we get past that March 1 time frame, and then hopefully we can talk about less corn acres being planted, maybe some delays in the South American double crop corn down there, maybe some unexpected demand to show up, or a weakening of the dollar, but that doesn't feel like it's going to happen here in February. So until then, we're still searching for positive news in the commodities, and it's hard to come up with anything yet so far.
Turn your attention to the soybeans. Argentina in particular, it feels like there is a battle there as to whether this crop is really, really good or whether some of it was really, really hurt. And I think it's just mostly about hope, but I'm not certain that's the case, because it may be that some of it was hurt, but not a lot. And I don't know what you're hearing from the trade.
Yeah, the private guys are starting to lower estimates a little bit. It's hard to say for sure. The problem is USDA was very conservative in reducing the Brazilian corn crop by only only 1 million metric tons. And most of the private analysts thought it should be 5 to 6 million tons lower. So USDA may, shave a million off next month and then a million tons off the next month and eventually get to where the private guys think it is. But that doesn't really help the market out, and it's the same way with the Argentine crop. Brazil or USDA did not lower the Argentine crop at all. So even if the privates do think that maybe it needs to be lowered a little bit, until we actually see it in print via the USDA, it feels like the traders aren't willing to put too much stock in the private analyst guesses at this point.
And finally, what is the most often asked question you're getting about new crop corn and soybeans at this time?
Well, number one is how many acres are we going to plant? And if we have a normal crop, if you put a trend line yield on however many acres we plant, what does that mean for the carryout? And I think we've gone through those numbers before, and 91 million acres of corn at 180 bushels an acre comes up to just over a 15 billion bushel crop production. And unless we get demand up, demand this year is 14.6 billion. Next year it could be 14.8, but that's still not 15. And so we will add to the carryout if we have a normal crop. So how low do prices need to go to reflect a 2.4 to 2.6 billion bushel carryout? That seems to be the question that farmers are asking. And December corn is in the 460s to 470 range today. Could we be in the low fours if everything turns out well? That's certainly a possibility. And so that's, I think, the question that farmers are asking and trying to get their hands wrapped around or head wrapped around, where do we need to start selling new crop corn?
And one other note, kudos to you. I was talking with Frayne Olson, NDSU agricultural economist, for next Tuesday's program, because I'll be out for the week or a lot of the week. And he was really concerned about the export market for both corn and soybeans. And it was related to the gap time that you were discussing as we were going into late July, August, early September, or the amount of time that the United States would have to export soybeans, and Brazil exporting later into the year and then picking up earlier in the season, this season. And he says that's really played havoc with both corn and soybean exports. I take it you probably see that.
Yeah, and that's something that's relatively new. I mean, we used to have these kind of months carved out where, these are South American months and then these are North American export months. But with the change, the delays in planting in some areas and just the expansion, I mean, in South America, I mean, the window between when they first start planting in northern Brazil and when they finally get the last being planted in Argentina and southern Brazil, that's a very big window. So, it really widens the window for when South America can export grain. And like I say, they seem to be the low cost producer at this point, and China prefers buying from them, if at all possible. So for all those reasons, yeah, the export demand seems to be a little weak here out of the United States currently.
Hey, thanks much. And we'll talk with you in 2 weeks and see you at the All Day Ag Outlook on the 5th day of March.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson's with TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing right here in Champaign County. And we'll be at the All Day Ag Outlook. I hope you are too. You can get yourself registered and buy your tickets today at WILLAG.org. There's a new article on the FarmDoc website. It's a first look at crop insurance decisions producers will need to make by the 15th day of March. Here's a quick summary of what that article has to say. You can always find it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And the FarmDoc team writes, while projected prices and volatility factors will not be finalized, of course, until the end of the month, lower corn and soybean prices seem very likely to result in lower paid premium cost for crop insurance policies for 2024, especially when compared to 2023. On the other hand, they write, the lower prices and premiums also mean less coverage in terms of revenue guarantees per acre that can be achieved at any given coverage level. Now, producers, they say, should begin to take a look at their crop insurance options for the coming year. Some farmers may consider reallocating the relative premium savings to increase total coverage via higher coverage levels on individual plans, or the use of supplemental coverage options like SCO or ECO. Considerations of SCO specifically will need to be incorporated in producers' commodity program decisions, since eligibility is limited to acres enrolled in the price loss coverage program. I did see Gary Schnitke yesterday and asked him about the options. At this point, he's thinking that Arc County is maybe the best option, possibly using ECO with it. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City now joins us. Hi, Drew. Thank you much. I take it you're in the great white, not so white north today, I guess.
That's right. There's not much snow up here. It's been a crazy brown year across the Canadian prairies. And I'm in Winnipeg, and there's a little bit of snow here, but there's a lot of brown poking through. So it's really not very significant. And that's been the story. Most of their winter, they had 3 weeks of cold weather, and that was about it. So.
You said you had a big crowd there. Who are you talking to?
Yeah, this is Canada's Crop Connect. They've got about 700 plus attendees today. Nice crowd, really nice crowd. And it's not a bad facility here. And so we've got folks here from all over the prairies, but a little more concentrated perhaps in Manitoba and eastern parts of Saskatchewan, but a lot of interest here about the multi-year drought that they're still trying to shake off. So I told these guys that I think they've got a lot to be happy about, or at least look forward to. Not necessarily make it a perfect year. I think there'll be some more trouble for a little while, but they're going to get off to a better start than what they've had in recent years, at least in parts of the region. The drought is really bad in southern Alberta. Some neighboring areas in Saskatchewan, and those areas where I don't have a lot of hope that there's going to be big time moisture before they start planting. So they'll struggle there. But the rest of the prairies, I'm really pretty encouraged about. The future looks good.
So have they been warm enough that what moisture they did get that might have been snow actually fell and was able to find its way into the subsoil there?
Yeah, I think in some areas it has been warm enough that frost is out of the ground. Very unusual for that to occur. In other parts of the region, the frost is down pretty far, so we're at least getting the top several inches Moistened up a little bit with what little precipitation has come and gone. And I think that'll be the trend for a while. They're going to be cold coming up for the next week and a half, but I don't see them getting into the deep freeze like they've been. But it is all about their spring moisture. They've got to have some timely rain events, especially in the southwest part of the prairies where it is still chronically dry, even though they've had a little bit of snow and rain this winter.
And then can I transition this into the United States just a bit, into the northwestern part of the Corn Belt and further to the west? The snowpack usually has a great deal to do with how well crops and other things come along in the springtime in some of those areas. Are you worried about the lack of snow?
Yeah, I do think it raises some concerns. It's all about the spring precipitation pattern as well as the winter snow. And now in the northern parts of the U.S., frost does get into the ground there, too, in some years more significantly than others. So it's the same kind of battle for North Dakota and parts of northern Minnesota. But you get a little farther south and the frost becomes a little less of an issue and the focus becomes on timeliness of spring rain and spring snow events that melt into the ground. And even though we're not doing too bad in many areas, there's still a notable moisture deficit in parts of Iowa and portions of neighboring states, as well as the Northwest Plains. And so there's reason to be some concern out there because we are going to see a pattern here late this spring and into summer, where we're going to build a ridge of high pressure once again over these areas. And I'm a little concerned that with the pattern being what it is right now, a northwesterly flow will dominate the upper atmosphere during late winter and the early part of spring. And northwesterly flows don't bring a lot of moisture to these areas. And so the opportunity for getting significant moisture to fall then becomes forced into a narrow window, assuming that our forecast for ridge building is correct. And so maybe late spring, maybe somewhere in April into early May will be the window of opportunity for getting significant moisture back in the ground. And if that window is missed and the ridge builds and we go into a La Nina maybe this summer, and we still have some lingering effects of this old volcano in 2022, it could get fairly warm and we could go without moisture for a long enough period of time that it could easily become an issue once again. So I do have concerns for some of the northwestern Corn Belt, a little less so maybe for North Dakota and Montana. I think they'll do better later in the summer.
La Nina has a better correlation with dry conditions in parts of the western United States. Is that correct?
Yeah, the plains and the western Corn Belt often will have a drier, warmer scenario in La Nina years. And it's most pronounced when we transition from an El Nino to a La Nina in a very short period of time, which is what the NOAA forecast model is suggesting. They think that, or that model thinks that, we will move from El Nino now to neutral ENSO conditions by early April, and to a La Nina by early June. And that's pretty quick. Now, the Australian Bureau of Meteorology, which also makes forecasts for ENSO events, is not on board with that. And neither are some of the other forecasts models produced overseas. And so the general tendency here for most of these models is that La Nina will come, but it is going to be a little bit slower than what the NOAA model suggests. In the case of the U.S., the slower transition into La Nina can provide a little bit more timely rainfall. The faster you move from El Nino to La Nina, the harder it is to get that timeliness.
Since you mentioned down under, we haven't talked about Australia in quite some time. Before we get to South America, anything there that we need to be aware of?
In Australia, all their summer crops are produced in Queensland and New South Wales. But the country, it has been enduring some impressive heat at times this summer. And it looks like as we go forward into this coming weekend and early next week, there's going to be a very strong ridge of high pressure that will build over Western Australia. Now, they have quite a bit of livestock that kind of wanders around. It's not nearly as important of a livestock area as Queensland would be, but nevertheless, it looks like that area is going to be seeing extreme temperatures of about 108 to 118 degrees for a few days, again, this weekend into early next week. And that'll make the news because that's pretty hot, to say the least. And it does not look like that kind of heat's going to get into the key agricultural areas in the east. But they'll still be warm over there. It's just not going to be so oppressively hot.
Speaking of pretty hot, it was pretty hot, I believe, in parts of Argentina. Dry, although rainfall has come.
Yes. Last week and during this past weekend, there was quite a bit of rain that fell. It was the first significant rain in central Buenos Aires since December 26th to the 28th, and really was badly needed. I think some of the double-cropped beans there may have been lost or at least were really badly beat up. But it's a fairly small portion of the overall crop there. And I think most of Argentina, their main corn and soybean production areas are a little farther to the north, and I think they were in better shape and handled the dry period a little bit better. They weren't as dry for as long either. I think January 16th was the last time that it rained in the key grain and oilseed areas. And this rain this past week was timely enough that I think the crop will snap around in a favorable manner. And we're going to see about 10 days of drying now in Argentina. So they will firm up again. But I think there's a lot of evidence that we'll see more rain after that.
Anything of note in Brazil?
Brazil looks pretty darn good. You know, I am still of the opinion that they've had well-distributed rain and seasonable temperatures since mid-December. And I know that we lost acreage and we've had some real issues with some of the crop up in Mato Grosso. But I think a lot of that loss came early in the season, and I think conditions since then have been not too bad, if not improving steadily. Brazil is going to be seeing rain in most of the production areas as we go forward through the next 10 days. It's actually a little wet in the north, and we'll get a lot more wet as we go forward. That would be places like Minas Gerais and portions of Goiás, and then on up into Tocantins and some of the minor soybean and corn areas in the northeast. Mato Grosso and areas southeastward from there into Paraná and parts of Sao Paulo will probably have a really good mix of weather for a while.
Hey, thank you much, and have a safe trip back to Kansas City.
Great. Thank you. Take care now.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. We're online right now at willag.org. You can pick up your tickets to the All-Day Ag Outlook Tuesday, the 5th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.